You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
December the 8th, 2020, just before midnight, last night, the state of Texas filed a lawsuit that many say could be more important than any of the others surrounding the presidential election of November 3rd. Texas bringing a suit against four states claiming they violated the U.S. Constitution and how they conducted the presidential election. Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Texas filed that suit directly in the Supreme Court. Article 3 of the Constitution lists a small number of categories where the Supreme Court has, quote, original jurisdiction. In other words, you don't have to work your way up through other courts. One of those categories, controversies between two or more states. The Supreme Court will have to be dealing with that issue, and we're still waiting to hear, will the Supreme Court entertain and listen to a case from Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania case, of course, claiming again that we had numerous cases of how mail-in voting was unconstitutional because they allowed and violating no-excuse mail-in voting. We're waiting to see if the Supreme Court will take that case up. If so, Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, who worked with Bush on the Bush-Gore case in Florida years ago, said, I'm willing to argue the case on behalf of Pennsylvania. I've been asked to do so. And still something else in play. Today, December 8th, is called the Safe Harbor Deadline. Federal law says this has to happen 6 days before the electors meet across the country to cast their votes for president. If states have resolved their disputes, their electoral votes as of today will qualify as conclusive. At least one Republican member of Congress, Mo Brooks of Alabama, said, I'm going to object to the electors and Republicans in Pennsylvania, urging other lawmakers to do the same. Not likely to happen because both houses had to approve it, and we know who controls the House. Rasmussen reporting a new survey of 1,000 likely voters asking, how likely is it Democrats stole votes or destroyed pro-Trump ballots in several states to ensure Biden would win? They were virtually split. 49% saying it's either not very likely or not at all likely, and 47% saying, yeah, very or somewhat likely. 4%? Yeah, don't know. We do know the Republican National Committee, looking forward to this next election in Georgia, the Senate race, very big and important, filing a lawsuit seeking enforcement of the Georgia Election Code concerning poll watchers and ballot drop boxes. In other words, do not try to pull what you did, we think, this last time. President Trump holding an Operation Warp Speed vaccine summit now, talking about getting the vaccine out to the public as fast as possible. New research on a possible COVID vaccine from Oxford University and AstraZeneca says it's about safe and 70% effective, but there are questions on how it will protect those over the age of 55. In the meantime, the first person in the world to get a COVID-19 vaccine outside a trial is in Northern Ireland, a 90-year-old woman. So how's that defund police working for you? How's that working for you in New York City? The police commissioner admits the city's on track to be at the highest level of shootings in 14 years. He said, we have made staggering numbers of gun arrests. But again, we've had the highest number of gun shootings are on track to be the highest level in 14 years. So they want to reduce the police force in New York, right? How about in Portland? How's it working for you? You also voted to defund police. This last weekend, just one house in Portland riddled with at least 50 bullets. And there have been numerous shootings. In fact, Oregon reports a 190% increase in gun violence in November compared to a year ago. Yeah, how's that defunding police working for you? And President Trump issuing a video today that some were saying, oh, good, he's going to give up. He's going to give up. He said, you know, they're saying 2024, suggesting that he should run in 2024. His answer was, I'm not interested in it right now. Let's do this one first. No, there is no white flag of surrender. And we'll be breaking down some of the latest developments after a short break. Please stand by.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand. Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
When you look at a country where 39% of Americans right now believe this last election was rigged, that's a real problem for confidence in the integrity of our electoral system. And so I'm hopeful the Supreme Court will step forward to its responsibility and resolve this case and resolve other cases as needed according to law and according to the Constitution to say this is a country where we respect the rule of law, where we follow the Constitution, not the momentary partisan swells of interest or passion you may see on either side.
The words of Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, on Hannity last night, and he's talking about specifically the Pennsylvania case. They're trying to get in front of the Supreme Court. We're expecting a decision today if the Supreme Court is going to hear the case. Now, the Supreme Court gets something like 8,000 cases presented to it each year. It ends up taking about 1%, 80. But, of course, this is an imminent case, and it has a time factor that must be considered. We'll see. We still haven't seen a ruling. I've been kind of watching to see if anything breaks on it. I haven't seen it so far. And Senator Ted Cruz had been asked by a Pennsylvania GOP congressman, Sean Parnell, candidate, I should say, and by Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania, will you argue the case for us? Cruz has argued before the U.S. Supreme Court previously. In fact, he was a key point of the Gore-Bush issue in Florida back during that election. So he said, I'm willing to do that if we could just get them to do it. If they will hear the case, I will do it for you. The Pennsylvania case claims that a 2019 state law allowing no excuse mail-in voting is unconstitutional. So if they can get the Supreme Court to look at that on a constitutional issue, we're not questioning validity of signatures, we're not questioning how they were counted, not questioning how ballot boxes were displayed or not, where they were dropped, where they were not, who collected, blah, blah, blah. We're getting down simply to the no-excuse mail-in voting is unconstitutional. So they're waiting for the Supreme Court. But now there's another play underway. But before I get into that, let me give you again Senator Cruz reference where he sees there's been an issue inside Pennsylvania beginning with the state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. Let's begin there.
In Pennsylvania, the problem was made worse because the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is a partisan Democratic court that has issued multiple decisions that were just on their face contrary to law. And that's not how elections are supposed to work.
No, it's not. The Senate, rather the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, all Democrats, and you know they've got something in play. I mean, it's not even a distributed number. They're all Democrats. So he's saying that in itself means that we have reason to question. And again, here is basically Senator Cruz and explaining as to why he thinks that the Supreme Court of the nation should hear this case from Pennsylvania.
I believe the Supreme Court should choose to take the case. I think they should hear the appeal. And as you noted, the legal team reached out and asked if I would be willing to present the oral argument if the court took the case. And I told them I'd be happy to, because particularly at a time when this country is so divided, when people are so angry, I think we need a sense of resolution, and we need the Supreme Court to step in and ensure that we're following the Constitution and following the law. Right now, it's not healthy for our democracy what we're seeing.
And as you heard him say in the opening soundbite, well, we got this many in our nation that believe the election was rigged. 39% was the number he cited on a survey. I don't know his source on that one. 39% believe in the election was rigged, that you have lost in election integrity for the nation. And then you have a Rasmussen report, which I referred to earlier in News and Commentary, just came out. And it conducted this survey December 3rd through the 6th among 1,000 likely voters and asked, how likely is it that Democrats stole votes or destroyed pro-Trump ballots in several states to ensure Biden would win? How likely is it Democrats were stealing votes or destroying pro-Trump ballots in several states to make sure Biden would win? The response pretty much split. 49% of them saying, no, not very likely or not at all likely that Democrats did that. 47% believed, yeah, it was very or somewhat likely they did. That's all within a plus minus 3% margin of error, basically a statistical tie, and 4% just not sure. The problem with the cases that are in play and have been is this date itself, December 8th. December 8th is called the safe harbor deadline, at least this time around, that's where it falls. By federal law, the safe harbor deadline must fall 6 days before electors meet across the nation to cast their votes for president. And the statute says as long as states use existing state law to resolve disputes about electors by the deadline, the votes cast by those electors will be conclusive. And by conclusive, it means they can't really be changed by Congress or anything else. But one Republican member of Congress, Mo Brooks of Alabama, said, I'm still going to object to the electors. And these Republicans in Pennsylvania are urging lawmakers to do the same. But you have to have the majority of both houses to agree to that challenge. You know who controls the House. So that's just not very likely to happen. In the meantime, the Republican National Committee filing a lawsuit today to ensure that the coming Georgia election, the Senate runoff election, January 5, that it's properly followed, the law is properly followed. The Republican National Committee lawsuit wants enforcement of two vital facets of the Georgia Election Code, one governing the rights of duly appointed poll watchers, and two statutory safeguards attending the use of ballot drop boxes as a method of absentee voting. There were questions this last time around about poll watchers, were they not giving full access to see what was happening? And then also you had the situation where boxes are pulled out from under a drape table at some point after everybody else leaves a room, including poll watchers. And the state secretary of state investigator said, no, there's nothing wrong with what they did. And most folks left, and we continued counting. Now, those who left, including the poll watcher, said, well, we're given the impression the voting was over for the night. Otherwise, we wouldn't have left. Now, you can debate all day long what was in the boxes, how they were handled, were they legit, and so forth. But it raises question as to why these boxes were under what appeared to be the only table in the room that had a drape over it, and the boxes were concealed under the drape. Well, you don't want to buy that. That's fine. We don't know what was in the box, right? Could have been orders for pizza. Who knows? But they did acknowledge the voting tabulation continued. And there were no observers in the room. There's a clear violation. That alone should be enough of a challenge. So we got that in play. That's, of course, that particular RNC suit pertaining to the upcoming Georgia election, but looking at what just happened in Georgia anyway. Now, here is what may be the biggest hammer to be dropped. Senator Ted Cruz saying, I'm certainly willing and able to argue the case for Pennsylvania if the Supreme Court will hear the case. We're waiting to hear. Well, in that case, we need some kind of response, right? The big tool, I should say, the big hammer that's now been dropped involves the state of Texas. This, my friend, this could be a very big point going forward. The state of Texas filing a lawsuit directly with the U.S. Supreme Court, and they did it just shortly before midnight yesterday, just before December 8 began. And the lawsuit filed directly with the U.S. Supreme Court asked the Supreme Court to rule on the election in four battleground states because they are contesting that it was unconstitutional in those four states. The states are Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin. The state of Texas lawsuit claims these states unconstitutionally changed election laws, treated voters unfairly, and triggered significant voting irregularities by relaxing ballot integrity measures. Well, what makes this case so big? Well, because Article 3 of the Constitution lists a small number of categories of cases in which the Supreme Court has, quote, original jurisdiction. Normally, a case that goes to the Supreme Court goes through various appeals and so forth, and eventually it gets in front of the Supreme Court, maybe or maybe not. As I said earlier, something like 8,000 cases are submitted to the Supreme Court every year, and they take maybe 1%, 80 cases. But under Article 3 of the Constitution, the Supreme Court does have original jurisdiction if the case involves, quote, controversies between two or more states, which is exactly the point Texas is making, that there were differences in voting rules and procedures in different counties within those states that violated the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. The case was filed, as I said, just before midnight last night, so it means it was filed on the so-called safe harbor deadline, just ahead of it. Those four states, if those ballots can be challenged and thrown out, that does affect the outcome of the 2020 election. The Texas Attorney General filing that challenge said trust in the integrity of our election processes is sacrosanct and binds our citizenry and the states in this union together. Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin destroyed that trust and compromised the security and integrity of the 2020 election, saying those states violated statutes enacted by their duly elected legislatures, thereby violating the Constitution. By ignoring both state and federal law, these states had not only tainted the integrity of their own citizens' vote, but the votes of Texas and the votes of every other state that held lawful elections. We now ask the Supreme Court to step in and correct this egregious error. This is going to be very interesting. I know many out there say, no, it's just another trick. Trump's still fighting. It means nothing. Actually, this means a lot. Now, whether or not it will stand, I'm not a legal professor on that, so I can't give you an answer. We'll try to book one for tomorrow. But this is one of those cases where the Supreme Court will allow a case to come before it goes through any other proceedings. We'll see if they react to that, and also the Pennsylvania case. And we're going to talk about mass disobedience before we wrap up the hour. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So yesterday I spent a lot of time on a piece that appeared in National Review by John Fun talking about media-driven fear warping our COVID response. And we were pointing out a new National Bureau of Economic Research paper says the media in this country went too far, creating a climate of fear and even panic. This was composed by scholars from Dartmouth College and Brown University. They were looking at articles and news coverage since January 1. And they found 91% of stories by U.S. major media outlets are negative in tone. 91%. Compared to around the world, 54%. And, of course, when you're looking for good news, you didn't get much. They say 91% were negative. That doesn't even take into account those that might have bordered on good news but kind of got lost under the headline, which often happens. And in the previous hour, we're talking about all the students in New York City going back to school this week, at least in pre-K and 3K students, K-5, are back for in-person learning in many of the districts, not all of them. But the kids have been kept out up to this time. De Blasio just now opening it up. Still no word on junior highs and high school because of belief that kids can't be in school during this. And yet Dr. Fauci has even admitted, you don't need to worry about the kids at school. So we have the media driving a message, pushing fear. We have blue state governors and mayors taking part in carrying it out, keeping kids out of school, and shutting down and shuttering businesses. As I said earlier, San Francisco Chronicle talking about how their entire region's being shut down for stay-at-home orders for several weeks, and now it's going to go right into the new year, and who knows how far past that. They're talking about a total restaurant apocalypse in the San Francisco Bay Area. And again, to restate for you, the National Restaurant Association says 10,000 restaurants have closed. We're not talking about they got shuttered just for the COVID for a period of time. We're talking about those have closed and out of business. They will not be able to reopen. You want to multiply that by the number of those who worked in those restaurants or helped bring service to them or had them located in one of their facilities they were leasing space to. And often, every time you try to stand up and speak out against it, you're labeled a malcontent and you're just ignoring science. Well, they apparently have been ignoring science when it comes to the kids of the school, because they have shuttered all these schools. And the damage to the kids, not just for lack of learning, but social relations, we're going to be paying a big price for that going down the road. So we come to this question. Is it time? Is it time that we as a nation consider mass disobedience? Where restaurants all over, wherever they are in whatever county and so forth, that they've been shuttered, say, to hell with it, we're opening the door. And if they all open at one time, what are they going to do? What happens then? Especially when they're open just across the county line for someone else. Mass disobedience. I'm not burning things down, looting. Mass civil disobedience. We're going to look at that in more detail with an author of that article when we continue. You don't want to miss it. Please stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I told you earlier that President Trump was holding a special summit meeting of vaccine discussions in the White House. And he just released word saying we're just days away from authorization from the FDA. Very hopeful the FDA will authorize a Pfizer vaccine within days, a Moderna vaccine almost immediately thereafter. So vaccines are coming. Of course, getting them out, who gets them first, all that's still to be played out. Does that mean everything will suddenly open up? I wouldn't count on it. And that brings us to a point, a piece written by my next guest. I've had him on numerous times before. Majoring political editor at The Federalist, John Daniel Davidson, with a piece titled, It's Time for Mass Civil Disobedience Against Lawless Lockdown Orders. John, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before you joined us, I was out reminding the public again about how much media-driven fear we've seen from the mainstream media and how schools have been shuttered when we're told there's no reason to do so, even Dr. Fauci admitting it. And restaurants being closed, the Restaurant Association saying 110,000 restaurants have closed, and that means they're done. They're not going to reopen. So you're talking about mass civil disobedience. First of all, why?
Because the people making the rules are completely lawless. They aren't basing their rules or their lockdowns or their restrictions on science or data. They're just making it up as they go along. The Supreme Court has already weighed in against the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, for discriminating against churches. They sent another case involving Governor of California, Gavin Newsom, back to the circuit court for the same reason, because they were discriminating against churches. And all these mayors around the country, like Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, they're just making up rules about which businesses can stay open and which have to close that aren't based on science at all. They're not based on anything other than the whims of these people who are seizing power for themselves and authority to act in this lawless way. And we don't have to put up with it as Americans. We can just simply ignore them. They have no authority to
all
do this.
Before we go to that next step, let me take the other side for a moment. I'm the governor of the state. I care about my citizens. I know they don't like it. I know it's not popular. I know it could cost me. It could be political suicide, but I think I'm doing what's best for my state, and therefore we're going to lock down until I say otherwise.
Well, if you lived in a country that allowed that sort of thing, then you could do that, and some countries have. But in this country, we have laws, and we have a process that you have to go through, and the government has standards it has to meet and due diligence that it has to perform before it imposes burdens on the citizens and business owners and Americans in this country. And that's exactly what a judge in Los Angeles said to the Los Angeles County Health Department. It said, you can't just create these laws against or create this rule against outdoor dining, banning outdoor dining, as the L.A. County health officials did on November 25th for 3 weeks, decimating thousands of businesses.
Yeah,
you can't do that unless you have some reason, some scientific reason. You have to meet the burden of proof and give some reason, which they had done without giving any reason.
And that L.A. County Superior Judge also added, as you quoted him, you have to talk about the benefit of keeping restaurants open.
You have to show a cost-benefit, and you at least have to do a cost-benefit analysis, which they didn't do. They just closed outdoor dining by fiat because they wanted to look like they were doing something.
All right, now, what about mass civil disobedience? Does that mean maybe every restaurant in the state of California, San Francisco Bay Area, they're saying they're going to have an apocalypse of what they're seeing, and across the nation, there are many in the St. Louis area the same, just suddenly say, you know, I'm going to open up, bring my people back. If they want to come arrest all of us and shut us down, we'll see how that fills up the jails, and we'll just test it. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's exactly what I'm suggesting, but let me be clear. I'm not saying that people should pretend like there's no pandemic or that there's no risk to opening up. People can open up safely, just like people can go to church safely, just like people can go in droves to Home Depot and Lowe's safely. So I'm saying that restaurants and business owners should safely open up, should organize, should all do it together, should get their customers to show up and support them, to get protesters to come up front, and then dare the authorities to arrest them en masse. I don't think they will.
And in fact, many sheriff's offices, departments, I should say, and even police officers across the nation have said, we're not going to carry out such orders, and we're told to do so. I mean, you're just going to give us more of a sense of that we're the bad people if we're enforcing something like that. We're not improving public relations one bit.
That's right. And look, there's a long tradition of civil disobedience in this country, and it's not like civil disobedience back in the 19th century or something. Larry, you probably know there at one point was a federal 55-mile-per-hour law that was passed in this country. It didn't survive more than a few years because everyone was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not following this federal 55-mile-per-hour law. And it went away, because people refused to obey it because they didn't feel that the federal government had the authority to tell them how fast they could drive in their state and their town and their county. And we face a similar situation today. People just need to ignore these lawless edicts from their mayors and county health officials that are just coming up with stuff.
You're listening to John Daniel Davidson, political editor for The Federalist. But to that point, the 55 limit was imposed on the states that if you want federal highway funding, you better put it down. So they were using a hammer over the states to make them, even if they didn't want to do it. But back to restaurants and so forth, deciding we're going to go ahead and open up. It's true, and I know you see it in numerous areas as well, and in, along the border of California or in counties. In one county we have here, pretty much locked down, but you go right across the river, another county, and you can go into any restaurant. They are jammed with people. They're making money. People are doing well, and there's been no massive breakout. And yet inside, just across the river, nope, it's too dangerous over here.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any more sense than keeping schools closed when we have other developed countries in Europe and other places in the world that have had their schools open this entire time. And they haven't experienced massive outbreaks that are traceable to the schools. Look, there is no data. There's no scientific data that says or that shows outdoor dining increases the chances of COVID spreading over other kinds of dining or other kinds of people packing. You know, it doesn't make any sense to have hundreds or thousands of people filing through stores like Home Depot and Lowe's every day, but you can't go to church or you can't dine in this outdoor place. And then, of course, in Los Angeles, we have the complete hypocrisy of the mayor and the county officials saying outdoor dining is okay for film and television crews because we need them because they're an important industry.
Right, there is
but outdoor dining is not okay for business owners.
And that specifically referred to that restaurant owner operating just about 50 feet away from that open-air dining for a TV crew, and by the way, it was an NBC production they were doing, and NBC, when they reported on it, didn't bother mentioning it as an NBC product. The other issue, too, here is that if we go this route, as you said, we want to use a responsible approach on it. We still need to be aware about COVID. But what if suddenly the rates begin to accelerate again?
I think the American people can be trusted to do the right thing. And just like Governor Gavin Newsom and Austin Mayor Steve Adler and Governor Andrew Cuomo and their families all decide what they feel is right for them and what level of risk they're comfortable with, just like they reserve the right to make those decisions for themselves and their families, they need to extend that right to every other American family, that they know what's best to keep them and their loved ones safe, and they can make those decisions for themselves.
And the other part of the equation, which we don't have time to get into here, is how valid are the numbers we've been given as to COVID testing? If it's up, I expect that. We've been doing more. COVID deaths, I don't know. Did they die of COVID or with COVID? And that keeps, you know, there are a lot of questions about the numbers we've been given anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the longer this goes on, I think the more data we'll have that shows that the risk to certain groups is very small, and that for a lot of people, business can go on and can go forward, and we don't have to destroy people's livelihoods.
And, John, again, your suggestion, if we suddenly have restaurants across the nation say, we're going to open, and we're going to invite people in, and we'll do it the safe way as we've been. I mean, many of them already put up mitigating shields and so forth, trying to help to meet the criteria, and then they're told that's not enough. And then they say, Well, you can have an outdoor dining if, you know, you put up a tent for them, but then now you got to drop the flaps because it's cold, you put a heater in there. It's like you're inside anyway. I mean, there's been no semblance of understanding, or I should say, intelligence in any of this.
It's capricious, it's arbitrary, it's completely cynical, and it doesn't have the force of law behind it. And Americans need to call their leaders on this bluff. They don't have the authority to do this to people. And Americans need to stand up and refuse to go along with it.
Well, we've planted the seed, or I should say you have, and I appreciate you joining us to explain in more detail. I think many are out there applauding. This is, again, John Daniel Davidson. You can read his entire piece at The Federalist. And as always, we appreciate you joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. That's an excellent point. I mean, first of all, do you accept all the numbers you've been given? I think most of us don't. Do you want to be careful? Yes. Can you live in fear the sky is falling, Chicken Little, all the time? You could, but is that the way you want to do it? I don't think so. But what we do have now is holidays here and all these businesses that, and the employees that need the money and could use the money. And, of course, speaking of holidays, one of them being Christmas, I want to tell you about Santa Claus telling a kid, you want what? No, I'm not going to give that to you. No. Coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So since the beginning of today's program, we've been watching to see if there's a ruling from the Supreme Court, if it would either hear or reject hearing the Pennsylvania case challenging a 2019 state law allowing no-excuse mail-in voting. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas had said, I will be glad to argue that case on behalf of Pennsylvania. They've asked me to do so. But the Supreme Court has to decide if it's going to hear the case. And they get something like 8,000 cases a year. They take 1%, 80 or so. And we still don't have a ruling. It could come later today that they will hear the case. It's an imminent issue. And then we have this other one that involves Texas filing a suit directly with the Supreme Court under Article 3 of the Constitution, where the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. Don't have to go through a previous court. That involves controversies between two or more states. The Texas suit claims that four other states, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, violated the U.S. Constitution and how they conducted the presidential election, and that hurt the voters of Texas. So we'll see how those play out. Well, of course, we are supposed to be in the season of happiness. Not so happy for a lot of folks right now, obviously, but trying to make the most of it. And many are going to lose what benefits and help they get either the day before or day after Christmas as some of their benefits run out. And those who are relying on the restaurant industry trying to get a job, keep a job, have holiday parties, do you have any idea how many businesses were going to host holiday-type parties for their employees? Well, hopefully they'll take some of that money and give it to their employees in the form of a direct check. But then that doesn't help the businesses that were going to host the actual parties in their facility and pay employees to cater and so forth. And there's always a Grinch to be found around Christmas. You know that. Well, in Minnesota, of course, in Minnesota, someone sent an anonymous letter. Yep, that's the way they do it there. Upset with Christmas tree lights being displayed in the neighborhood, on a home. This is not a religious concern. Here's what they wrote. The idea of twinkling colorful lights are a reminder of divisions that continue to run through our society, a reminder of systemic biases against our neighbors who don't celebrate Christmas. Well, it's partly religious, I guess, or who can't afford to put up lights of their own. We need to take them down. Those lights are, quote, harmful. Harmful. Harmful? I got to tell you, I'm a what we call with, I say, with deer and dearment, a Texas oil field trash redneck. And your big thing about Christmas lights is you just leave them up all year. We don't even bother taking them down in some cases. So take that. But now this resident in this St. Anthony, Minnesota said, we got to tell these people to take them down because, one, it's reminding other people you don't have lights, right? No, it could be. I don't want to put them up. You ever consider that? And then if I put them up, well, damn well, they're going to stay there all year long. So there, what do you want? Oh, I can't make this stuff up. These people give me material every day, every day. Someone said, you're going to run out of material at some point. I said, nope, not as long as we got some people out there that I think are going to do what they're going to. And, for instance, in a mall in, where was this? This was in a mall, and a kid went up to the mall. I can't, it doesn't give me the location of this mall. But Santa Claus was behind the desk. You can't sit in his lap, you know. And the kid is asking across the desk, that's covered in fake packages because there's nothing in them, and is asking Santa for something. And the mom hears it, and Santa says, no, not going to give that for you. Well, I just want, no. And the kid starts bawling. And the boy's mother said, what? And Santa said, no, no guns. Well, now, wait a minute. She said, my kid was not, he's asking for a Nerf gun, a Nerf gun. And Father Christmas said, nope, not even a Nerf gun. If your dad wants to get it for you, fine, but I can't bring it to you. What else would you like? Lots of toys, Legos, bicycles, cars, trucks. What do you think? Wait, kid ran to mama in tears and crying, and she told him, don't worry, you'll still get it. But Santa says, no to Nerf guns. Well, you kind of know the leaning of that Santa, don't you? Now, if the kid had asked for a real bazooka, I might have said, yeah, you can't have that. But a Nerf gun? Listen, again, back to Texas. One of my favorite gifts was getting a new cap pistol every Christmas. And I gave my girls, even though we were living in St. Louis when they were born, when they reached about, I want to say, 6 and 8, I gave them each a holster with a cap pistol in it. I think they got a gun for each hand. And I know some of the folks around the neighborhood say, why are you giving your kids guns? I said, they're a cap pistol. Give me a break. Some people, yeah. But thanks for providing material for the program. I appreciate it. And I know the audience appreciates it. Well, of course, we've got more coming up tomorrow. Let your friends and neighbors know. They will certainly enjoy this program. Podcast at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. Again for tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.